Shane is a channeled intuitive, spiritual teacher, artist, and author of In the Garden of the Goddess, The Rhythm of the Cosmic Pulse, Architects of Light, Spiritually Awake in the Physical World, and her latest book and most esoteric work to date, Teachings from the Temple of Thoth. Sharon has over 16 years of extensive experience as a spiritual teacher. In addition to teaching groups, she works closely with her students through one-on-one apprenticeship programs, through telepathic rapport with the Master Creator God Thoth, and the Ascended Host. Her prime area of teaching is that of spiritual mastery. Sharon is an adept at Kundalini meditation and has helped hundreds of people through guided meditation, dream interpretation, inner child and adolescent healing, and integration methods, among numerous other spiritual practices. The Ascended Host continues to work with Sharon in reaching more people in the global community by offering group participation channeling sessions, events, and Temple of Thoth classes through the internet. Sharon, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Otherwhere. Welcome.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks for having me. It's a joy to talk to you.
Oh, it's going to be a great conversation. We've got a lot of ground to cover, and I'm really looking forward to it. So,
me too.
let's find out a little bit about you first, though, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who are wondering, who is Sharon Shane? There are probably many listeners who've seen your regular newsletters and would love to find out more about who you are and how you got to be a spiritual teacher, and in a way a teacher of the teachers through the Temple of Thoth website and teachings that you're involved with.
Okay, well, I can begin at the very beginning. When I was born, I was intuitive, so that's where we begin. And of course, the quest on the spiritual path is always, who am I? I am that which I am, and that's where it comes full circle back to the higher consciousness. But as a child or as a toddler, I didn't know that then. I was still, you know, wondering at this strange world I was born into, that everything seemed backwards to me. I had the ability to see energy and things like that, but I didn't know what that meant. I used to say to my mom, oh, the wallpaper's moving, Mommy, the wallpaper's moving, when I could just see energy particles, you know, making it look like the wallpaper was moving. And she would just brush that off. And so I didn't have anyone in my immediate family that was intuitive, psychic abilities. In fact, when I was about 6 years old, we moved from the city to the suburbs, and my family got into the local Christian church, and so I was raised in a Christian church 5 hours on Sunday, you know, Sunday school church all day long. And so I was very brought up and taught very specifically the Christian Bible. And I always had intuitive feelings about people, although I could sense things that are going on. And by the time I was 15, I had a lot of questions in my mind about what was being taught.
I can imagine.
As far as the anger, the fire and brimstone kind of anger, I was like, and I made this conscious decision that no god of mine is a god that is angry. That's a human trait. So my god is a god of love, and I didn't care if I was struck down at that moment. I had a glimpse of a moment of fear, but I thought, no, this can't be true, because my experience of my inner world was telling me differently. So I set off on my own path from there to seek my understanding of why I was hearing voices on the astral plane and, you know, that kind of thing that no one around me could relate to. And I had a best friend I grew up with in my neighborhood who finally I confessed to her that I saw on her father's bookshelf there was a book that said Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain with Uri Geller and all of those things. That was back in the late 60s, mm-hmm. And I found that book on her father's shelf, and I said, can I borrow this? And he said, sure, go ahead, keep it as long as you want. And that's where I found some of my answers, that I, you know, was psychic or had some abilities that my family did not recognize or understand. And then one moment I decided to share it with my best friend, that I heard voices at night when I was falling asleep, and she said, you? Me too. And I'm like, oh, great, there's another one. So I had someone that I could relate to finally that was intuitive, could hear things on the astral plane. And we both kind of set off on our spiritual path of quest to read, find out things about that. I used to have precognitive dreams.
Yeah.
When I lived in New Jersey, growing up, as a teenager, I had precognitive dreams of movie stars or, you know, celebrities, having met them, and I wasn't around them. So when I was 23, I moved to California with my best friend, because we had to go. We were told, you know, we had to go. And there I worked in the entertainment industry around celebrities, and I was following some of my dreams when I was younger. And I found a spiritual bookstore that I just spent hours at, and found some channeled events, and went to workshops. When I was hypoglycemic, and my physical chemistry was a mess because I was a sugar addict, and I didn't know it. I was a sugar junkie. I would eat sugar all day long, all night long, and I would lose 5 pounds after eating, you know, a big bag of candy. So I was hypoglycemic and didn't know it, but I knew something was wrong inside. I didn't feel well. I didn't feel right, but I didn't know what. And when I got to California, I was eating a chocolate donut for breakfast, and I heard a loud, booming voice say, "You're killing yourself." And I just stopped midstream, and what's that voice? And my ignorant ego ignored it and decided to take a bite of the donut. Anyway, but my best friend and roommate at the time came in, and right at that specific moment said, "I found the number of a psychic nutritionist. I'm going to make an appointment. Do you want to go?" And I went, big booming voice, "Psychic nutritionist." But my ego still kicked up because I was 23 and pretty obstinate.
Yes.
And I said, "Well, I don't want to give up my cookies and, you know, cake." And then she said, "Well, I'm going." And we always had that pull on each other where if one of us was going to do something, the other one finally gave in, and we kind of had that pull on each other. So we were good for each other in that way. And so I said, "Okay, well, I'll go just to see what it's about." Well, it changed my life. I felt healthy after I went on this diet. I think it was like a 2-diet cleansing system she put me on. And I was able to gain weight finally for the first time in my life. I felt healthy. My cells were screaming with joy, and I finally knew what it was like to be physically healthy. Having been born on sugar, I think the baby food had sugar back in the 50s.
Yes.
And my parents were big sugar eaters and didn't know. They were ignorant in that sense and didn't know, you know. They were doing what they thought best. But this was part of my path, so I could also learn to... That was what I call my cleansing of the physical body. And then in my 30s, I did my emotional body cleansing by going to a lot of soul workshops, going into the depths of my soul wounding and healing that wound so that I cleansed the emotional body to the degree where I now understand the mechanism and the soul wounding so that I could teach others that. And then working on the mental body, which is probably the most difficult body, because if you wake up in the morning and your rambling thoughts are already going, it's generated from the subconscious and unconscious mind, so it's mastery now at that level of the one, what those call the one point of focus of knowing where your thoughts are and then moving into the higher consciousness, you know, beyond the conscious mind to align with the higher conscious presence of the I Am. So it's been a path for me to progress along the bodily cleansings, if you want to put it in those terms, the three body system, and also during the 1980s when I was doing a lot of intensive work and workshops and my soul level healing and some other workshops that I was doing, past life regression type workshops, things like that, I started channeling. All of a sudden, I was the channel. Now, instead of going to the channeled entity to, you know, do the workshop, I was now, you know, channeled through someone else. I was now hearing direct instructions on how to raise Kundalini energy when I was meditating, and remembering that I started that practice in India, and actually understanding that I'm still practicing in India in that sense. It's all simultaneous, which brings us back to that now moment of the I Am present in me. So it's a matter of, you know, remembering that in the moment more and more along my path, and that's when my senses really developed more. I opened to the light realm.
Yes.
Through Kundalini and the 12 chakra system. And what happens there is the Antahkarana bridge of light is built between the physical three body system, physical, emotional, mental body, aligned with the spiritual etheric body that is the beginnings of the higher consciousness light body realm. And that's the bridge that begins that. And you can see into the light realm. And you can see more clearly into the visionary realms, which are more abstract. So in that sense, I can go into telling you what those things are, but that's my personal path was along those that progression, born intuitive, but developing it along my path to the point now where I have telepathic rapport, and it comes to a point of total trust. I do not prepare my classes ahead of time. I do not prepare the books ahead of time. I do not, you know, write notes. I simply get and receive the titles, and then the information is filled in as I go along. And it's a co-creative process with my conscious mind and the higher consciousness and the ascended masters and the ascended hosts, the spiritual hierarchy, whatever names people give that, but it's the multidimensional aspects of the higher consciousness at different awakening levels that are also ascended masters and the light beings, as people call them, levels of awareness of the light. So in that sense, it's a progressive path for me, and it is a path of mastery. And it's not the only lifetime I have chosen a path of mastery, in a sense, because all of the lifetimes are working concurrently towards that goal of unification with higher consciousness. And what SOS teaches is at some point we put our power down along the path, and at many points we put it down throughout the day. And it's always to remember to pick up that scepter of power, pick up the power in that conscious moment, being consciously present, and then overriding the conscious mind with the higher consciousness that just becomes the co-creation of the heaven on earth, so to speak, experience. So I guess that sort of encapsulates. I had some other experiences when I was in my 20s of feeling I had to go to England. It was life or death. I had to go to England. And my best friend and I, you know, I was 21, we got on a plane and we went for a whole month. And we had many, many reawakenings of lifetimes there. So I discovered that my spiritual path was what's called Celtic.
Right.
Heritage in that sense. So, and then I outgrew that Celtic spiritual heritage in the sense when I realized that's when I put my power down, had to pick it back up. So we expand, we continue to expand beyond the level we attain. So, you know, I clung to that, you know, sort of Celtic tradition for a long time because it was so familiar and so comforting. But it was also a very important lesson for me to realize that's when I put my power down.
Yes.
And I could actually tell you exactly what happened. When I went to England, I didn't understand what was happening. I had my particular ascended master guide physically manifested there because I was hypoglycemic, I was very depressed. I just wanted to kind of throw myself on the train tracks at some point, and he showed up in the physical flesh, and I, you know, it put a body on to talk to me.
Wow.
And the same thing happened to my best friend. But they didn't talk to us directly. He talked to my best friend, and hers talked to me, because we couldn't deal with them directly at that time. It was very, very fascinating. My best friend at the time had a dream the night before. We were in Dover. And she said, I had a dream that this guy walked into this restaurant. He looked like this. And she described the whole thing. The next day, we were in the restaurant. Nobody else was in the restaurant in Dover, England. And in walks this guy with the curly hair that she said. And sits down, looks at me, and said, I once met a girl who was deaf and dumb. Is your friend deaf and dumb? And I'm looking at him like, what kind of statement is that? And he just got up and walked out. And she had a past life remembrance that she was an artist and she was deaf and dumb. And so that was bingo, you know, clicking.
Yeah.
And then mine was also, you know, the fact that later when I went to Los Angeles and I went to a channeling, I asked who was, you know, what was that all about? And I asked because the night before I had, I was about 24 at the time, and I had a ball of light, brilliant, gleaming light in my room. I woke up, I sat up, there it was, hovering in my room. It was unlike any light you see here. It's what I see now in the light realm as the brilliant light.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my deceased grandfather and the channeled entity that I was going to, you know, the channeling event. But I was afraid. I was young, I was scared, and I thought I was dying because my grandfather
dead.
So I was scared, and I got up and I ran to my roommate's room and asked her, you know, woke her up. I said, oh my goodness, there's a, you know, my dead grandfather's here. And she woke up, she said, I'm having a dream about my dead grandmother. So we were synchronized in that way a lot of the time. So I went to the channeling the next night. I said, what was that ball of light? Were you there? Who was that? What's going on? And he said, yes, we were there, and your grandfather was there, but how about another person? Were they there? And how about an Eastern Indian person? And then I went, oh, aha, it's the same guy in England. It just all clicked for me.
Yes.
And he said, is this your master? It's your guide. I went, oh, goodness. They materialized at a time when I really needed it, because I was really lost in a fog of physical imbalance. And if that set my emotional imbalance into serious states of depression, because the sugar in your system will cause incredible highs and lows.
Yes.
And it affects your emotional body. So when I did the body cleansing, and I went, oh, wow, what a path I've been on. It's all because I could teach it now. It's all kind of take the long, hard road so I could come through the other end into the light to understand it. And I always had to break everything down and understand it, because I didn't know at the time that I would be a teacher, but that I was sort of looking back now, it all makes sense that I started teaching. Someone asked me, will you teach? Because I was just kind of spewing my wisdom. And that's when, 16 years ago, someone asked me to start teaching them. And I went, okay, I guess I'm teaching. So then I grew into being the teacher of other people coming to me, in that sense, to teach and share what I know. My name, Sharon, on the soul level, means to share on and on. Mm-hmm. So at any time, Liz, feel free to cut me short, because I will just keep talking, because I do share on and on. And I joyfully to share my path with others.
Well, it's definitely a remarkable story, and I know that we're just skimming the surface there.
Right,
but one thing... Sorry, one thing that really struck me was that your dialogue echoed so much of stories that I've heard before from people who are in similar situations as you, people particularly who are channeling Ascended Masters, and the times in their lives when they've had desperate lows and they have needed the presence of their guides to be around them. And they have come, it happens again and again, because it seems to be at that crisis point, it's almost like it could make or break you, and they just step in to reassure you, to make sure that you actually have a real experience, one that can't be misinterpreted,
right.
So that you go beyond that faith level to a knowing level. And I'm sure that once you get to that knowing level, then you just completely open up to that connection. The trust is definitely, you know, cemented at that point, and the work can begin in earnest.
Exactly. Get it right there on the, and let me just say a little bit more about that.
Yes.
For me, it was a big karmic lesson, because what it's called the dark night of the soul.
When
you hit those crisis points, I hit them twice in my life, and it was a repeat. But a deepening, and it has to do with the suicide for me, or you know, wanting to bail out at a young age, or before I've completed my work. For me, that was my challenge to overcome. And so when I hit those points, of course they're going to be there yelling, "Don't do this, because this is your biggest mistake, and you're going to do it all over again."
Yeah.
In that sense, for me, it's like the warning signs are there. And yes, the master shows up and says, don't do this, because we want you, you know, we have big plans for you, basically, in that sense. There's greater things to come if you'll just, you know, get through this dark night of the soul. And I want to share that with everyone as far as that dark night of the soul, because so many have gone through it to come out the other end. And with the deepening, or some have not come out the other end. It's the crash and burn.
Yes.
You don't come out the other end. And you come back and repeat that cycle until you overcome that, that lesson. And I just wanted to share that to make sure that that's clear for people that have hit those crisis points, that it's your greatest lesson, and to overcome it is also your greatest joy. and your greatest fulfillment can then be, you know, tasted in that sense. Like you said, it does come into now a beyond belief, beyond faith. It comes into the knowing that the Master has beyond the shadow of a doubt, that voice is the higher consciousness knowing, rather than, I wonder if this is true, I think I'll choose to believe this kind of thing.
Yes.
People exist that, you know. So thank you for putting that very beautifully, so echoing that back to me also.
Oh, it's a pleasure. One of the other things that you have echoed in what you've spoken about is that there is a relationship that is formed, and it is like any other relationship, the one that you have with the Ascended Masters and with Thoth. And I would like to get into that relationship and how it was built in your own life. Obviously, we've touched on an experience of meeting one of the Masters
in
the body.
Right. He's not what you call a popular famous one, like Saint Germain.
Right.
His name is just John. Not just John, but, you know, it's just a simple name, John.
Yes.
I see him in his Indian form, Eastern India, because of my lifetime of India, where he was on the planet teaching me. He is an Ascended Master. He taught me in the physical as well as beyond the physical, now that he's transfigured and ascended. And can step in and out of this realm if he so chooses, but it does not necessarily have to. I've benefited him by not having him have to do that anymore, because I can just directly contact him and discuss things with him inwardly now. It's much more elegant than for him to have to put on that body, in the sense, not that it's hard for them, but to downstep their energy and do that. What they teach is the law of elegance. Why do that when we can just have direct heart-to-heart telepathic communion? Why communicate when you can have communion? You know, communication is good at one level, but let's move now into the elegance of communion, where you feel at one with the love. The love is the bond. When I feel the love of the Master, that's the bond that just opens that gateway and that portal of the heart. And all of that love pours through me from there, downstepping it from Divine Source, because we cannot embody all of the light and love in the physical realm. It's not possible. We would ultimately be the light, you see.
Yes.
We would dissolve this reflected light into and transfigure into the light. So my relationship was built very, very specifically, and when I was doing my work, once again, with the soul healing and all of that in the late 80s, I made the commitment of what's called the divine marriage to the higher consciousness, of the divine masculine and feminine principles united within myself, to that oneness and that wholeness that is the I am presence of the higher consciousness. And within that, made the commitment, even though I was a single mom and had a child and had friends and other people in my life that I loved, I made the commitment to my higher consciousness that would be my primary and number one relationship. Because I still know that I'm in an ego personality as Sharon Shane in a physical, emotional, mental body. And my higher consciousness has many, many, you know, aspects to it that I cannot embody. So in that sense, I'm still cultivating the relationship with the higher consciousness to become more and more of that I am presence, and to be multidimensionally aware of all of the presences of my higher consciousness, or the higher consciousness. And that takes a commitment to the relationship within meditation, communion, communication that leads to communion. And at that level of the higher consciousness, commitment is that rapport with the higher, ascended master skin. I will distinguish that Thoth is not an ascended master, but a master creator God being. The ascended masters have incarnated into the physical realm, transfigured what's called the half-code reflected light here, this blinking light, back into the direct light, into a light body in the light realm. The master creator Thoth has never been human, has never incarnated into the physical realm, but creates universes in that sense. So it's a little, in a sense, it's beyond the ascended master level.
I see.
That makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Okay. So there's this the distinction is there, and I outlined it in my newest book, Teachings from the Temple, so in the introduction, the difference between the Ascended Masters and a Master Creator God being, of which there are numerous Master Creator God beings, numerous Ascended Masters. They're all levels of consciousness, creating, co-creating. As we are creating our physical experience, they are creating it with us, co-creating it with us, and changing the plan, the evolution of the entire system back into the light. And we can get into all of that if you like, because that's a whole other topic also.
Yes, and when we come back, we will definitely, definitely do that. Before we go to the break, though, I just want to quickly discuss the relationship that you built with Thoth and how it was that you were able to discern that you were receiving impressions from the consciousness that we refer to as Thoth, as opposed to one of the Ascended Master beings.
Right. Every soul imprint, I'll take the Ascended Masters first and foremost. As you know, my personal master materialized, so I pretty much see him in that figure or that form in the light realm. But they can change form. They're not, stuck in any kind of form in that sense. But because it's familiar, I see him now in the direct light. He's not wearing a business suit. He's wearing white or, more light, luminous. In that sense, in the light realms, when I talk to the Ascended Master, that's my personal guide. Saint Germain, I saw him before I knew what he looked like. I didn't have a picture of him. I actually picked him up in my aura when I was doing a psychic fair and doing readings, and he just jumped into my aura in a sense. I started channeling Saint Germain, and someone said that, and I had aura photo test taken at the same time, and there was a lavender kind of violet color around the white light that's in my, the masters that are in my aura photos. And someone said, that's Saint Germain. I'm like, who is Saint Germain? I never heard of him. So I'd seen him very clearly, what he looked like with the violet blue eyes and the goatee and everything that he looks like. And then I came across these books later and saw a picture that someone had drawn of him. I'm like, that's exactly what he looked like in my vision. So that's how I could distinguish Saint Germain, by the violet ray energy and by the actual light body formation that I perceived in my third eye vision of the inner realm. And it was uncannily identical to the one someone else seeing it. So that tells you that we have a shared reality beyond the physical of communication through imagery also.
Well, yes.
And so when you have those shared experiences, it's just really a form of validation. But the trust must come with that inner experience anyway. But it's always a nice confirmation of validation. And then with Thoth, it was completely different in the sense that what was coming through was much more technically advanced. Stuff that's over my head. I'm not a mathematician, but everything is number. And I'm like, I'm so bad at math. Why are you picking me, to teach me this stuff? Or, to teach others math. I'm not good at the really advanced math stuff. It's always my worst subject. So for me, it's a learning ground of the mathematics, or the higher mathematics, of the principles of creation. And he teaches me the very basics in the numbers. But the concepts themselves are much more technical, much more advanced, and much more beyond the Ascended Master level. And I don't know how to describe that other than it comes in geometrical formation. I see Thoth in what is called the Adam Cadman body, the perfected body that we're made in the image of in that sense. But I also see Thoth in a sense of, it's just much more powerful, the energy. I don't know how to describe it, other than when Thoth comes through, and he downsteps, he does not come through as profound as I know he can. Or I don't like to say he, because it's a he-she. It's both Shasoth, and it's, many names. They is really what I like to call it. Although I see mostly the masculine image, because the masculine, divine masculine principle is that which is form and expression.
Right, of course.
The form, it's going to be maybe more masculine.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm seeing Kuan Yin, it's less formed. I don't know how to describe it, but it's the feminine energy is less formed. for me, not always. When I see my higher self in a feminine form, sometimes it's very, you know, it takes its shape very clearly, but that, to me, that's the perfect balance of divine masculine feminine. So it comes and goes in different ways for me when I'm either seeing visions or seeing into the light realm. I do remember one time I was channeling with my assistant. I was teaching her to channel, holding the resonance for her, and we were channeling, and when those come through, our heads bob.
Wow.
You know, the energy. And I said, we were like, Bob, we called ourselves bobbleheads. When those would come through, because it does kind of bob in a sense, because, and it spirals in a sense of as energy comes through, it's a little stronger or more powerful in consistency. And I was going to channel, and I went to the source of the divine source threshold of the Holy of Holies, and I was just in awe. And I came back kind of into my conscious mind. I said, well, I didn't get anything. I just was at the threshold of the Holy of Holies. And she said, you didn't get anything? I said, well, I mean verbally. I can translate. I can't speak. It's just awesome, you know. I mean, I didn't get a specific message, but we were laughing at the statement itself. It's just ironic. But so there's different levels of where I go and tap into at any point in time, because it's so multidimensional. And there's so many different aspects of the Godhead and the one divine source, all in progressive stages of awakening and mastery and levels of consciousness, that it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it really is.
Yes, the brilliance, see, light is intelligent self-awareness, and it's brilliance. And Thoth says that the words are not accidental. Brilliance, genius. Brilliance of the light. Light is intelligent self-awareness, and the divine love are the essences and qualities of the light. That's the divine feminine in that sense. So with that mixture of that beauty, you have the love wisdom aspect, and you have the love and the light, the qualities and nurturing aspects of the divine feminine as love, and you have the brilliance, and it's almost like what you call technological brilliance of the numerical mathematics of creation principles, beautifully mixed together when it's balanced at the source there. So we're out of balance with that, and that's what needs to be, you know, brought back into alignment.
Well, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about when Otherwhere returns. We're speaking with Sharon Shane. You can find her on the web at sharonshane.com. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the internet classes that Sharon runs. There's an intensive coming up where she'll be taking a small group of people to Colorado, and we'll be chatting about some of the activations and meditations that Sharon will be leading during that intensive. And we're also going to find out a lot more about Thoth and about the very latest book, Teachings from the Temple of Thoth. That's when Otherwhere returns. I'm Liz Miller, and you're listening to bbsradio.com.
Downloading Otherwhere.
Hello, this is Fred Burks of the webofloveorg and wantoknow.info websites. And when I want to feel and connect with the web of love that interconnects us all, I tune in to Liz Miller on Otherwhere at BBS Radio.
Listening to Otherwhere, my name's Liz Miller, and our guest this week is Sharon Shane from Liquid Light Connections. Sharon has written a new book called Teachings from the Temple of Thoth, and it's a channeled work that she has worked very closely with Thoth on. And before we went to the break, we spoke a little bit about your perceptions of the consciousness that we're referring to as Thoth. This is not just an individualized consciousness. You liked to refer to it as they. So when the teachings have come through, there's a lot of references to we. in some of the passages, because it's not just one being that's speaking, is it?
No, it's a combination of the multidimensional aspects of what's called the higher consciousness at the master creator God being level. Soph gave me that term, master creator God being, because the God aspect is sort of the masculine, the divine masculine, and the being aspect is the divine feminine. So it's the combination of the divine masculine and the divine feminine principles that their consciousness is. And they are the many named, in a sense. They're not the almighty, you know, all God beingness. I don't know what you'd call that, but the almighty is the one divine source of the consciousness. But the master creator God being level of consciousness is one level of individuated I am presence at the threshold of divine source. It's a very abstract, but that's the best way I could describe it without repeating the entire book. Because all this information is outlined in all of my five books in many different layers and levels, all kind of weaving together. The newest book does describe in the beginning how Soph is a master creator God being, what his name, a couple of his names are, which is Hermes Trismegistus, they call themselves the master of the Trinity of Creation, because Soph teaches that you have to have minimum number three to manifest or create anything within the light or within this realm. So he calls himself, or they call themselves, the master of the Trinity of Creation. Once again, coming back to numbers and mathematical and geometries and different focal points of energy that are put into the geometries to create form. So master creator God beings create universes, and sometimes they co-create universes together, whether it's light universes or what's the physical realm, which is they call the fallen continuum. And sometimes they create them just of their own accord, in essence. There's multitudes of light universes. There's multitude of universes that are created or manifested. So in that sense, there's uniqueness in within each light universe, and each creator God being is expressing the creation principles within a light universe. And that's the goal that those wish to teach humanity, to become the creator in our own right, co-creating aligned with the I am presence of a higher consciousness as another individuated master creator God being. That's a long goal and a far, you know, cry from where we are and creating our reality here first, taking that responsibility. But that's the premise of their teaching. So Soph always says that the name Soph was told to me. It's pronounced Soph because they have taken the oath to teach humanity. So Soph is the name that is used. Names are very powerful as power syllables, power words, things like that, in the creation principles. So the name, the meaning is inherent in the name and through the pronunciation of the syllables of it. Soph always says there's no accent. So yes, in language, within number, it's all there. All of the meaning is compacted in there, compressed into that meaning within the syllables. So taken the oath for eternity, or however long it takes for every single human being to awaken to mastery, is the commitment level of Soph to teach humanity. So that is the name they channel upon to teach the creation principles, mathematics, number, language, meaning, and how to create, and so forth, and things that boggle my mind and are beyond that I'm still tapping into. So in that sense, Soph is the name used for the mission carried out. And they are it's Shafat is another name. That's the feminine aspect of Soph, and so you'll see in the mythologies and the legends of icons of Egypt and things like that, where there's the gods and the goddesses. There's many aspects and many names. The divine source is the many names. There's many feminine goddess names. There's many masculine god names, and in that sense, the name depicts its characteristic and, you know, what function is within the Godhead or within the divine source.
Yes.
So hopefully that answers conscious mind, and then waking to the higher consciousness. It's a forgetting. It's a not knowing. It's the individuation process. So it's okay not to know, because it's all part of divine plans to remember or awaken to that. Wow, it is so brilliant in its light of the awakening.
Mm.
It's all part of the process.
And for those of you out there who are into Egyptology, well, you're probably very familiar with the image of Thoth that is depicted in Egyptian hieroglyphics with the ibis-headed deity. And I loved the explanation of why in Egyptian times the image of an ibis's head or beak was used to indicate one-pointedness, whereas these days Thoth's description of the one-pointedness of the teachings would be compared to the direct point of a laser beam, because in our culture that's what we understand. Right. And, you know, however many thousand years ago, it was the beak of an ibis that metaphorically got that message through.
Exactly. That was new to me when it was just coming through. I'm like, oh, I finally understand what the ibis head was all about.
Yes.
And it is. He's teaching the one-pointed focus where you have to concentrate your consciousness into the light point, a point of light. In that time, what was in their, surroundings, environment, was the one-pointed beak of the ibis. And it gets so misconstrued, in the later interpretations. Those came through the temple priests at the time, or through certain temple priests, not all of them.
Yes.
The teachings come through like they come through today.
That's right. Like they were doing it
through any age, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets distorted, and Thoth is always here to bring through clarity through many avenues, not just me. There's many avenues to come through to this plane to bring the clarity through. And wishing to have direct contact with all of the humanity to bring through the clarity of the light and the teachings. Actually, when I was told I was going to be teaching the Temple of Thoth classes on the internet a year before I actually started teaching them, and I didn't have the access or the ability to teach the class because I didn't know what he meant. They said, we're going to be teaching the Temple of Thoth classes through the internet interactively. I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know how to do that. How do I do that? And he said, don't worry about it now. We're gathering people. When it's ready, we'll let you know. I'm like, okay. So a year went by. I forgot about it. Then all of a sudden, I was online in a chat community someone invited me into. And there was the ability to teach and have events and stuff. And this is, Thoth came through very loud and clear. So this is where we will be teaching the Temple of Thoth. And I'll remember it. I'm like, oh, that's right. They told me a year ago. And look, it's already set up. I just had to step in here and start teaching. And it gave me the titles, and we just went on to the classes from there. And I would just channel the classes through. And it was an I still do that today. I have my own software company that I go through that have my own chat room that I teach the classes through. Those come through, gives me the title. I have different events and different things that I teach with the masters and with Thoth. And the Temple of Thoth has kind of evolved into calling master class series, and they're all Thoth teaching the dynamics of, all of the principles that he's teaching throughout, and bringing more clarity through each class and event. And so it all comes about. I just kind of show up and listen, and it's a joy for me to participate in the co-creation, because it's my highest fulfillment and my divine mission to do so.
Yes. Well,
there is a joy there.
In a week's time, you're going to be taking a masterclass on remembering Atlantis and Lemuria.
Actually, that's Saturday.
This Saturday. Gosh, I've got my dates all wrong.
Okay.
So let's have a chat about what you'll be covering during that masterclass.
Well, that's a chapter that's in the new book, Atlantis and Lemuria, and it's really about the basic imprint of Lemuria as the divine feminine and Atlantis as the divine masculine. And in this fallen continuum, these aspects are split into duality, and it creates what's called the flashing or blinking universal principle within the reflected light here. We are in a blinking world. It blinks on and off very much like your computer. The ones and zeros are blinking on and off to get the picture on the monitor. So it's a reflected light, but it's blinking. It goes into matter and antimatter very quickly that we don't see it, because we're vibrating our physical body, our eyesight, our consciousness is vibrating at the same blinking level that
yes.
it's blinking at. So it is a flashing principle, universal, continual. And what it is that the direct light is not flashing or blinking. It's radiant. It's brilliant. It does not, you know, flash or blink on and off. The divine masculine and divine feminine within the direct light is unified without separation. In this realm here, in the fallen continuum, it is split into the duality. It's the Adam and Eve creation mythology. It's Lemuria is the imprint of the divine feminine at its purest, and Atlantis is the divine imprint of the divine masculine at its purest. But what happens is it gets distorted once again through the unconscious projection. And so there's lessons to be learned through Lemuria and Atlantis. Atlantis represents the rise and fall of civilizations through the domination of too much masculine energy, out of whack, out of, you know, way out of balance, needs the divine feminine Lemurian energy to rebalance. So you've heard of the return of the goddess. We talk about the balance of the divine masculine feminine in more detail in my first book, In the Garden of the Goddess, the return to the garden, that balance of the two. So this takes it into further remembering incarnations in Lemuria or Atlantis and where your own consciousness may or may not have participated and where it's being repeated today, because we are on a repetitive loop of repeating history. And what lessons can we learn and change the program so that a new program is put in place with the higher program of the new creation?
Well, that certainly seems to be the thrust of all of the teachings, that we're out of alignment with the divine plan, and that we are the ones who are responsible for bringing ourselves back into alignment with it. And these teachings are giving us tools and new information that will help us do that. And I guess that you see, well, how do you see your role in this grand divine reworking of the plan?
I'll just reiterate what has been taught to me all along, is that within this universe, there's the personal experience, or the sphere of influence, or realm of experience. There's a global, unified, collective, and there's the universal level.
Mm.
And all of these three levels are reflect each other. But it begins at the really begins at the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And when the individual goes into, say, clear out their emotional woundings and their emotional upheaval, you know, their soul woundings, and does their emotional healing work or their physical cleansings, and, you know, does whatever they need to do on their soul's path, it adds to the collective. When we go into the unconscious and clear out the old program, it adds to the collective unconscious. And so that's when the program gets overridden, the old evolutionary, you know, fall imprint gets overridden by the new creation of the ascension program. So it's done first and foremost on an individual spiritual path of ascension, and then it enhances the collective, and it opens each individual that follows the path inwardly to the light, and their own path of ascension makes the way brighter and clearer for the other parts of humanity to follow. It's sort of like you cut a path in consciousness, and then it becomes the norm. And then it becomes easier for people to arrive at that place quantumly.
Yes.
And so each individual takes the spiritual responsibility for creating their own personal reality and how that impacts the collective. And if you're adding to the negative ego, fighting and warring within your own self, if you're arguing with yourself in your own head, you're adding to the collective warring that is going to be reflected in your world. And I think that the masters will bring through some information on this in a channeling throughout this interview. But I'll talk about also, you mentioned the intensive, and my own personal path. What they're teaching me right now is in my Kundalini meditation. I had a spontaneous light body activation in the 80s, and I was just glowing, and I'm like, wow, you know, I just felt pure of heart, and it was this golden glow was coming through. I could see it, and other people saw that I was glowing, and it was a light body activation.
How beautiful.
Spontaneously.
May I ask how that was triggered?
I don't know. It was the perfect alignment in that place, and at that point, it just happened spontaneously, and then, of course, I kind of forgot about
yes.
it went on my path. recently I said, you know, I want to know how to do that. That's my path. I always want to know how to do that. How do you do that consciously? I asked and I got the answers. So a lot of the activations that they're teaching me now that I'm practicing in meditation, I'm going to be teaching in an intensive 3-day intensive in the Colorado Rocky Mountains in a private home setting at my friend's house. And so I'm going to be able to teach some of these meditative techniques at that intensive. And there's a few spaces left available. If anyone's interested, they can look at my website. And so I'm teaching what they're teaching me, how to practice that light body activation by will, you know, by clearing, by alignment, by all the things that they're teaching me to do inwardly. I am now going to teach others the techniques to practice. And so that's also a little bit of that talked about in the new book, Teachings from the Temple of Thoth. And the transfiguration process, because transfiguration is one of those words again that we hear.
We certainly do.
What does it mean?
It's got so much, so many different associations.
Changing, trans means change, figure is number. Both said very clearly, it's to change the numeric frequency of the resonance. That's what transfiguration is. So it's once again back to number. And I went, aha, all this time, transfiguration, I knew it was ascension, I knew it was this, I knew it was that. But the actual word itself reveals the exact meaning of it, and he gives some formulas for that. There's more than one formula to change the formula of the resonance. And we can talk more about resonance and raising of the resonance.
Yes, I would love you to actually talk a little bit about the way that when we're working with the masters and we're opening ourselves up to greater levels of reality and higher frequencies, that we need to, well, actually, if you could explain the process, that would be great, because you'll do this in a much more concise and articulate way than I ever could. So.
Hopefully, we'll see. Between the two of us, I'm sure we'll arrive at the light. What basically, my second book goes into frequency. Rhythm of the Cosmic Pulse is about the frequency of the downstepping of the energies into this half-code light. And it's a vibration, and our consciousness is vibrating. And I learned about vibrations very young because I did do some astral projecting in my 20s out of my physical body and flying through walls in my astral body. Then I learned very quickly that that's just the realm of the emotional body of collective humanity anyway. And there was just disincarnate entities and, you know, kinds of strange, unevolved characters and things that experiences that you can come across. So the masters have taught me long ago, rise above the astral realm. Don't dwell there for any length of time. If you're going, you know, go to the light and, you know, transfigure and transmute all of that within your own consciousness. Don't bother with, you know, astral projecting and flying through walls. It's really no big deal. What it taught me was that it's all levels of vibration. I'm simply moving through my physical body into my emotional body and my mental body, which are just vibrating at higher levels of vibration, but it's still vibration. And you can still be vibrating at a negative or fear-based reality, is what I'd call it. So the physical, emotional, and mental bodies are levels of vibration. Whether they're synchronized or not is, you know, the balancing that is done through healing processes. Like acupuncture will help balance those three bodies. Hands-on healing works and massage and things, that, you know, meditation. All of those tools will balance that three-body system to vibrate in a harmonious and healthy manner aligned with love. The belief system of the mental body vibrates at fear or love. If it's vibrating at fear, it's along with the program that's pretty much... fear is one of those core imprints of this universal system. So it's to conquer fear first and foremost at that very core basic level, to raise the resonance, to be fearless, to not let any fear lower your vibration, because fear will immediately lower the vibration. And negative or constricting emotions lower the vibration. The raising the higher resonance, the joy and bliss and the ecstasy and those kinds of things, raises the vibration more aligned harmoniously to align the three-body system so that you can move eventually beyond this pulsing rhythm of reflected light to the direct light of what those call the emanations, the radiant emanation. It's not a pulsing. It's the emanation of the light that is the one-pointed focus of mastery and the transfiguration and the creation within the direct light. Because form can be created within the direct light. See, there's an imprint of the divine plan that we're aligning with here. And because this fallen continuum into the unconscious has fallen into that sleep and out of rhythm, and the ego took hold of everything, the human ego, and distorted so much of the truth and perpetuated this mythology of fear and this projection of fear, that program that is running unconsciously, both personally and collectively, is what you see on the screen of life outside yourself. And that is the truth of what is created in your life. How many times do people say, I want to win the lottery, I want to win, and it's not my thoughts that create reality. It's not your conscious thoughts that create all of your reality. It only creates some of your reality. Your unconscious programming is what's generating it. When you wake up in the morning, there's an example you could do by just listening to your thoughts. The very first thing when you wake up in the morning, those just start streaming up as you're coming conscious, because when you dream, you go into the unconscious. The collective unconscious, that's where all the archetypal energies are, that's where all the bizarre images are, that's where the higher consciousness can come in and talk to you and plant seeds and, you know, communicate and leave wonderful gifts for you if you so choose. I do that, I teach that in the meditations. I go into the unconscious with people, I lead them in there to go to the portal of light, to go to the higher consciousness, to see what's in the unconscious that needs to be cleared out. Overcome that and go into that light portal, to the light realm, to the higher consciousness, because that's where it's, that's the unconscious is that veil that everyone's talking about,
yes.
The veil between the worlds. And so all of these terminologies make a lot of sense when you really understand the mechanics of consciousness and the levels of the mind and how it works. And so the conscious mind might want to win the lottery, but the unconscious mind has a belief system that says, but I never win anything, or I don't deserve this or that. So it's about clearing out those beliefs.
Right.
But there is a core belief in the entire universal system that has fear based as its reality. And it's in the new book. And I will give that to all of your readers, right, or all of your listeners right now, because it's such a core truth and a core awakening that fear was a necessary ingredient to create this universal system, as putting on the brakes that you've gone too far from the light, turn back. Because it's to go into the unconscious and to awaken as the master within the creation, to return fully awakened to the light. So fear was supposed to be just the brakes that don't go too far into the unconscious. Well, it fell too far, in a sense. And then fear got perpetuated, and fear feeds on itself. And so, and then all the imagery that comes out of the archetypal unconscious is either that of angelic love or devil fear. You see, the very basic, very primary, that, you know, which is it colored with? You see, it's just all your archetypal energies. An imagery will be colored with one of those two crayons, so to speak, in your projections, and it gets more difficult to discern it because the ego is trying to decipher and decode what these images mean, and it really doesn't have the ability to decipher. It's the higher consciousness that knows and can teach and can guide us through the maze of our own creation, of being lost in our own projections of either fear or love. And a good way to gauge yourself is, where are you restricting your spirit and your expression, or constricting it? Then that's fear right there.
Yeah.
You're afraid to expand into the light and to break through that, and conquer that fear. So one of the classes I taught was on conquering fear, and that's on a CD. I record all of the classes for people that can't attend through the Internet. They're always available on CD if they so want to, you know, participate in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So conquering fear is very important. At that core level of the universe.
Yes.
The imprint of the causal plane.
And of course, once we conquer our fear, then we can raise our resonance.
Right.
And that's key when it is,
it is.
Yep. So if you could expand on that.
Yes, and as I raise my resonance, what I do when I channel is I let go of the physical body, I let go of the emotions. So while my emotions are just usually calm, you know. But if I'm emotionally upset or if I was emotional, I would have to calm that down to channel. But I'm pretty easygoing at this point and pretty, you know, mellow because I've done a lot of that work. But I know also the tools of how to calm myself down if I should want to go there. You know, if someone pushes that button, I just don't go there. I step back, I create space, and I calm myself down if it's not worth fueling that ego, and I step back into the higher consciousness. So I just let go of the physical body, I relax it totally. My emotional body, the vibrations have to be like a still pool of water, calm. The mental body is like a still pool of water, like the wind would be on the water. I teach that in my spiritually awake, in the physical world, there's exercises to calm all of these bodies down. And then I raise my resonance up by just simply opening to that higher resonance through many, many hours and disciplined meditation. I've been disciplined in my meditation. I just knew how to transcendentally meditate when I was in child labor, when I was giving birth to my son. I just thought, well, breathing's not working for me. I'm just going to meditate. And all of a sudden, the graph went like completely straight, the needle on the graph.
Oh, incredible.
I was able to do that, yes. And then I was able to just push the baby out in two pushes, and I had a very easy birth because I just let go of everything. So that's my training in my other lifetimes, from my India lifetimes, that I know that I didn't study in this lifetime. So we are a conglomeration of all of those lifetimes in this point of now, and we can call on all of our resources. Also, things that we just know that we don't know how we know are coming from other lifetimes also, that we've already practiced, that we're just taking it steps further in each now moment and expanding.
Yes.
And that's how I've learned to calm my resonance again. Then the higher consciousness and the master sort of downstep the vibration into the vibration through thought transference. So they're sending the thought transference into the vibration world that I exist in, my conscious mind, and I'm raising my consciousness up to meet them somewhere at the 12th chakra level and communicating telepathically. And that takes practice, discipline of meditation.
There's something in the teachings from the Temple of Thoth that I really, really want to read out, because when I read it, I rejoiced. It was one of the first times that something that is so indefinable was explained. Well, the way that those teachings come through into linear space and time, you know, it's explained very early on in the book. And so I might just take a moment.
Sure.
And I did make a note. Here we go. This is just so wonderful. This is actually in your introduction to the book, and I thought that the way that you explained this was absolutely brilliant. And this, I think, will be a wonderful way for us to conclude this portion of the show. And when we return, Sharon will be very kindly bringing through a channeling from Thoth, and this will, I think, preface it very wonderfully. She begins by saying, "This volume is intended as an overview of the spiritual teachings from Thoth to build another bridge of unifying the conscious mind with the higher consciousness. Thoth assures that in the information in this book will add unto that which is to shine the light of clarity into the shadows of the sleeping, unconscious to gently awaken consciousness." And that's certainly one of the roles of this program. In the attempt to bring the abstract nature of consciousness into linear terms and sentences, the conditions of the linear time frame creates a certain disparity between the actuality of pure consciousness as existence and the medium of the written word attempting to describe the abstract. When speaking of consciousness as existence beyond time and space, the terms used to describe time and space are in certain instances herein applied to the states of eternity and infinity, which then creates a seeming paradox. it is to be noted that such disparity is the nature of trying to confine eternity and infinity into that which has limitations inherent within the linear language system. It is so beautifully put, because what you're doing is you're receiving these downstepped transmissions and lifting your own consciousness, which is limited by time and space in the third dimensional reality, to try to somehow grasp and connect with those higher frequencies, translate them through your multidimensional anatomy and, of course, through your brain and through your vocal cords, and then try to bring something through that's meaningful.
That's my challenge. That's the challenge and the joy of my work, is that I'm learning while I'm teaching. And especially with writing the books or doing any of the classes, it's especially the writing of the books, is it's a co-creation of, like, putting it in the linear, you know, format, stringing it out on that linear. It's fourth dimensional time, actually. Three dimensions of space and the fourth dimension of time.
Yes.
Is the reflection upon the space, you know, the movement of consciousness in space. And then the fifth dimension, which I know you wanted to touch upon, is the imaginal realm, that which imagines beyond those archetypal imprints that are already in the program and brings through anything new, new programming, new visions, new creations, new inventions. The fifth dimension has been tapped into by the visionaries and inventors throughout humanity to bring through new things. And so that's fifth dimensional. And then the sixth is balancing the dimensions of both and, so that you can begin beyond that linear time and have, what do you mean? It's not either or anymore. You mean I can actually have both and? Yes, the masters say. So that's sixth dimensional in that sense. And so, yes, the linear time is a tool that is used to string it out and reflect upon it and ponder and say, that makes sense now. And so we are given this tool of reflection, which is the fourth dimension that we're in the physical realm. It's also part of this half-code reflection light. To reflect it, we project it, we reflect on it, and ponder, and hopefully learn from our projections and our pondering as a global humanity. To help change then the program and move into the golden age of, you know, projecting the love and the communion and the community of the nurturing qualities of what the higher plan is working towards, the divine plan is working towards in the plan of evolution.
Well, Sharon, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll have a little bit of a chat before we go into the channeling about the fifth dimension. I want to talk about that a little bit more, and just want to get your thoughts on where you think we are right now as humanity and what you think we're headed towards in the next, well, at least in the next 5 years. So, we're on Otherware. This is bbsradio.com. My guest this week is Sharon Shane. She's an intuitive channel and author, and you can find her on the web at sharonshane.com. This is bbsradio.com, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Hello, this is Jonathan Goldman. I am a healing sound pioneer, and it is my great, great pleasure to be with Liz on Otherware, bbsradio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We're speaking with Sharon Shane on Otherware. This is bbsradio.com. Sharon, we've talked a little bit about your own beginnings and your own journey through your own awakening process, and now how you're employing the knowledge that you've picked up over many lifetimes in this one to take us in a certain direction as a race of human beings. And I'd really love to know where you think we are right now in the whole scheme of, you know, where we should be at this time. I mean, I know there aren't any real definite marker points where we should be here at this time and that should have happened by then. I think a lot of people are confused about all of this new information that's coming through people like yourself. You know, we're given so many different tools, so many different packets of information and different styles of information. Everyone finds what they resonate to the most, of course, and what is perfect for them at that time. But it can also be very overwhelming. And at the end of the day, I know that a lot of people probably think, well, look, I've done all this meditating and I've tried to cleanse my auric fields of all of the crap I've been carrying around. But what now? Are we okay? Is all this work really going to be worth it? Because there just seem to be so many other people who are alive right now who seem to be so unawakened and don't look like they will awaken anytime soon. So, you know, what are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I can share what the masters have been teaching me, and I don't read a lot of the channeled messages or anything that's going on out there. I'd rather go direct to Thoth or you know, see what I need to do individually, because I know it's an individual responsibility, first and foremost, once again. The masters have taught me that be mindful of the ego that wants to save the world, for that is going to set you up for failure every time. So anyone that's going around wanting the entire world to ascend by a certain date and time is going to set themselves up for a great disappointment, because that's the ego wanting to rescue the world, you see. That's what they teach, and that's what's clear to me, that you change your own reality first, or work on your issues first and foremost before trying to, you know, work on global ascension. That is part of the program. That is part of divine plan, global and universal ascension. Doing the alignments, so we did a solar convergence alignment, and we aligned our sun with the great central sun in one of our meditations. And that's done. We did the alignment, but other people will have to approach those when they get there. We don't determine when they will get there. It's not for us to determine when they will get there. It's for each individual to choose their priority on their spiritual path of aligning their consciousness with that higher conscious plan of divine plan of evolution. And it is a progressive plan, and it takes time and linear time, as we talked about, to unfold in its progress, because it is on a repetitive program. This universal system is on a history repeating itself, universal program, so that you can learn the lesson of, you know, not repeating the karma program, so that you can rise above it and change the program and to be masterful. But that's done, once again, on an individual basis. When you get together in meditations and light groups, that's wonderful work to be doing. That's what those call pockets of light, and holding the light for others, being anchors of light into this plane. But it's not to be misconstrued or confused about being, you know, saviors of the entire planet, that it's all up to the light workers to rescue or save all of humanity, because that is not in alignment with what the masters have taught me. And that is where I think some of the, you know, there's many sensitive people that don't like seeing the warring, and it's disturbing, it's upsetting. But these people are choosing this on their unconscious level for their own lessons that need to be done and need to be focused on. And also, as a collective of humanity, it's a greater reflection of the lesson for your own karmic path that you can also see. It's like a microcosm and a macrocosm. You can really see it within your own life. I have helped people see when we had the very big floods here with the Katrina. hurricanes down in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with another individual who was up north here in the United States, and this wasn't experiencing the floods, but I was working on her individual session there and what was going on with her. And what it turned out was it was in her microcosm was an exact replication of what was going on down in Katrina.
Yeah.
So at, you know, bring it home to yourself and say, what is it teaching me about, you know, my personal reality? Where am I not taking responsibility
mm-hmm.
for my personal reality? That the, you know, where, well, you know, the wars around the world. Where am I starving my soul, you know, when you see starving people? How can I nurture my soul? I nurture my soul, I nurture all souls. And that reflection will change when more individuals take responsibility for their own spiritual path. And the greater picture will start to shift and change. So you will see pockets of change and shifting. You will see pockets of history repeating itself. The masters always say that they will not predict the date because it's up to humanity to choose. If they are to predict the date, then they are robbing humanity of their mastery and their empowerment. So if anyone's predicting dates of, you know, apocalyptic endings or things like that, it's to look to your own belief in fear or your own fear of that happening. It's to look at your own projections or reactions to what's happening in the world. Always bring it home to yourself and work on that. And in that way, you do take responsibility globally and universally.
That's wonderful.
And you can work at all three levels. You know, you can work at all three levels simultaneously. But especially for those in the beginning path, work at the individual level, first and foremost. And even in the group situations, you're bringing all of your individual baggage into a group situation also. So work on your own karmic lessons first. Work on getting back to the soul healing and the wounding. Nurture yourself. Feed your soul, and you'll feed yourself. And of course, there's always the actions externally. You can always help feed another and take that action. But it begins with the divine feminine, which is, you know, feed the soul at the soul level. And that, you know, will not be reflected as starvation in the world. And anger and rage that are the storms and the fury. The weather is the collective emotional body of, and collective emotional and mental body of humanity. So the weather upheavals will give you a good example of what emotional and mental belief systems are raging out of hand, or, you know. So Mother Nature is your own soul reflected in the larger collective.
Yeah, and, you know, everyone these days is much more aware about the environment than they were even a couple of years ago,
exactly.
Which is in itself a wonderful thing, because that indicates that there has been a shift in consciousness on a mass level,
right.
And I think that's a very positive sign. So now...
let me just say, here on the news, the global warming...
Yes.
...is being debated, and there's those pros... saying humanity's responsible, and I'm saying yes, finally, you know, because 30 years ago I knew this, you know, that the ecology was an issue and that we were doing it. It was a reflection of humanity. And now, 30 years later, it's being debated on TV. And there's those that are in complete denial of saying humanity has anything to do with it whatsoever. And that would be what the masters say is the adolescent stage, because the adolescent stage of the soul doesn't, you know, take responsibility. It becomes the 100% ego, and you know, the adult spiritual path is to, you know, rise above, and, you know, grow or expand beyond that adolescent stage of not taking responsibility for its impact. So that's where the masters are saying that the majority of humanity is at their at the child or adolescent stage of their soul's path, and when each moves through that stage and steps into the mastery of spiritual adulthood and takes responsibility, like an adult would in regular life, take responsibility for things, that's where they are spiritually in a sense. And there are these pockets of spiritual adult, you know, beings that are holding and anchoring that light for others to learn how to be the spiritual adults and take responsibility for the impact on the projected collective. But there's great lessons to be had, and the masters would not rob us of these lessons, but will teach us how to learn from them and to change, you know, our reality, which is happening. It's being reflected. Both sides are being reflected. They would say don't choose up sides, but be the enlightened one that sees both sides. That's the six-dimensional balance of, I see where they're, you know, arguing the pros and cons here. They're both true, in a sense, but you move beyond that paradox, and then you overcome it completely.
Hmm.
And you can rewrite the program at that level.
Well, that's what we're all about, rewriting the program.
Exactly, a new imprint.
And with that said, I think this is the perfect moment for us to introduce the masters and ask for them to join us in this broadcast in a much more vocal way.
Okay.
So, Sharon...
I've been here all along, but...
yes, I kind of figured that. And now they can... Yeah, they can speak to us more directly. Before we do that, I'd just like to thank you so, so much for the time that you've given us today so far.
Oh, thank you, Liz, for your program. It's wonderful that you're putting this effort in, and I invite everyone to donate to your causes and participate in listening to your broadcast.
Thank you very much.
You're providing.
Thank you. And also, would you please just remind everybody about the intensives and the internet classes?
Okay, well, this Saturday there's the Atlantis and Lemuria class at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. But it's through my internet chat software, so you have to email me. You just go to my website, www.sharonshane.com, and click on info or contact me or somehow to ask questions about anything that we've discussed today. And I have an event, I have a channeling event coming up next Thursday the 19th. I don't know what, Australia, it's probably the next day, 20th, but it's the 19th here in the States, and it's the Gathering with Ascended Masters, which is a general channeling session and question and answer. People can bring their questions and answers to the chat room and ask direct questions and get a direct response. And I have some other things coming up in May on the Internet, Decoding the Unconscious, which we can go in and rewrite that program by, you know, using archetypal energies. And I have the intensive in Colorado, the Rocky Mountains. That's June 21st, I believe. I have to look at my own calendar. 20th through the 24th. June 20th to 24th, which is the... I'll be in Colorado the month of June for anyone there that may want to contact me. And I'll be doing that intensive.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Sharon, once again. SharonShane.com is the website to go to if you'd like to find out more. And I believe that the Master Thoth will be joining us very soon. And if time permits, we may even be able to ask a couple of questions. But I will sign off for now. And thank you again, Sharon.
How much time do we have left?
Well, we have at least 20 minutes, so we've got plenty of time.
Okay. So just if I keep going, just you can interrupt.
That would be wonderful.
It will probably not be too lengthy, but I have a message here.
Okay.
I close my eyes as I channel, so I go outside of linear time and tap into that multidimensional being, both Creator God being and the Masters are always present. And I'm a direct channel, so I'm going to listen inwardly, and then I will speak what they're speaking to me telepathically.
Thank you. It's great to actually have you explain how that works for you.
Right. So I do listen internally. So if there's pauses, it's because I'm downloading the info, in a sense, telepathically, and then I'm just repeating it word for word. Greetings, dear ones of our golden heart, the solar radiance of our heart shines upon you as we are you. We are with you as we are you. We are here to tell you that we walk alongside you, even though those of you that are not aware of our presence, we are aware of yours. We wait ever and a day at the threshold of your awakening awareness to greet you in the light, to add light to the light that is already. With each spark of your awakening, it intensifies our light also, you see. We honor those this day in each awakening, for each awakening to the truth of the light of your being is that which shines the light into the dark corners of your world. Your spirits in expression are a beauty to behold, and such beauty is beyond words. That comes from the heart, always and ever. But these words we bring to you now are filled with the love and the joy everlasting that we wish you to arrive in the presence and the glorious radiance of your own conscious awakening. We are here to tell you that the seeds have been planted in the collective unconscious. The seeds of new beginnings for humanity. And these seeds will blossom in their time. Those that are planting seeds, the tillers of the soil, so to speak, the soil of consciousness, do not labor at their efforts. We see the joy in each seed planted. And we are here to guide you into nurturing the blossoming to come. In this way, new seeds are planted evermore within divine plants. There are what we would refer to as subsequent plans. The overall plan is so complex as to boggle your mind. And it is to each and every one that we give the morsels, little bites, so to speak, of this knowledge of the light that you can taste and consume at your own pace, you see. For the light is never intending to overwhelm the consciousness of humanity. Within the light of your own awakening, you will arrive at these truths and these knowings. Shall leave all doubts in the shadows of the past. We speak to you about walking the path through your linear corridors, and we are here to guide you through the maze of your own being. The linear corridors we speak of is your confines of time, and we are here to show you how to move the walls and expand your consciousness into the multidimensional realm of existence. Those of you that straddle the threshold of dimensionary awareness, understand these truths. And we are here to tell you that there are many more dimensions of your consciousness to behold. For you are indeed the masters in the making. As we see you bumping into the walls of your own making, we do not wish to see your futility and frustration. So we are ever with you to bring forth the guidance and the light to ease your pain and your sorrows, to pour the divine love from the one golden heart through your heart center to nurture yourself and your world. We ask only that you leave behind the fear that creates the walls and the barriers, for it is only humanity that cuts itself off from the love you see. The love is ever present for your asking, and we remind you always to remember to simply ask, and it is yours. This is the highest choice of mastery you see. Simply ask, and in the seeking and the questing of yourself, you will be answered by the higher self you see. We are here to tell you that there are seeds already blossoming in pockets of light, as we call them. And these seeds will be sprouting forth and shining aspects of the new creation. Look to these seeds of light blossoming in their beauty in your reflected world, for it will arrive at your very doorstep. But you must open the door, you see. As we are with you, we are you. We walk as you, as we walk alongside you. We know that these concepts are difficult for some to grasp, but we are here ever and a day to stir the awakening to the light of your own beingness. We are here to tell you that there is a plan so divine and so intricate in its working, already put in place, but it is up for humanity to align their consciousness with the love of this plan. For those that work with the grids and the matrices, we would suggest that you envision yourself as a grid and a matrix of light. For those of you who work with the healing energy, we would suggest that you invite more light and love into the heart to flow through you by simply asking. We see often that humanity forgets to ask. The higher consciousness must be sought. In the seeking, you are found. We repeat this often, you see. We are here to tell you that as the upheaval occurs in your world, we remind you to not add unto that which already is and has been, but to shift and change your consciousness is to shift and change the tides in your world, you see. We say there are those that wait for things to change, and there are those that elicit the change. Which will you be? We challenge each to step into the mastery and the light of their own conscious awakening, to put forth the change, to be the change, to embody the light and the love, for the world needs just that, does it not? We would suggest that you not be distracted by the dramas. There is a mythology that plays throughout your historical repeating. The mythologies are repeated at each level of the individual, the global, and the universal. We would suggest that you move beyond the mythology and the legend into the place of command, that is mastery. The world is not waiting for saviors. The world will continue on as it is until each master awakens to their own level of life. Those of you that have awakened and continue this awakening are shifting into what we call the new creation, the new design, the new template of a light universe never before created. You are the new creation and the new foundation. And it is upon this new foundation of light that this is built, you see. We speak both metaphorically and within the light of created form. We speak to you now of that which is created from the direct light. And this is a template that is overlaid upon the old program. It is a matter, and we speak directly about matter, shifting, physically shifting in alignment with the light. This is occurring in stages. It will not occur overnight, for such upheaval is not within the love that is divine plan. We have eternity, you see, for divine plan to play itself upon your shore. It is only the human ego that worries in anticipation. We would suggest to those worries in anticipation of what will happen to ask yourself, what will you choose to make happen? And we would suggest to all of you who are awaiting divine plans to look at your level of anticipation and ask, is it a form of wanting to escape that which you are unhappy with? For you see, only the true joy is found within. When you land upon the shores of joy within your own inner landscape, then will your outer shores reflect that joy. And the peace and the tranquility within your heart will be known to be the truth. And the shores of your beingness will no longer be overwhelmed with the raging seas, you see. We say that this is a time for humanity to make these choices. And each choice is made individually. It is to ask yourself where your choices are adding to the collective, or being the light bearer who stands on his own shore, so to speak, as a beacon for others to arrive in their own timing. We leave you now with these words to stir the light, to add light to the light that is already, to intensify that which is the brilliance of the light, of your becoming. And we see that you all are becoming masters in your own right. We send you forth now to quiet the seas of contempt, to quiet the seas of rage, and to create the peace that we know is your truth within the one heart. Blessings, dear ones. I am so. Okay, Liz, I guess if you have any questions, folks could answer them now, if you like.
The question that I would have regards linear time and the way that it feels as though it is speeding up at this time as we reach the ending of this particular cycle. And I would love to know if there is any basis in reality to the way that people have been feeling about time speeding up. Is it really happening?
Yes, of course. I do go into that in my second book, Rhythm of the Cosmic Pulse. That is all about the acceleration. And also in the newest book, Teachings from the Temple, so it talks about that, the 2012 and the acceleration.
Yes.
Of the planet, that it's there's some misconstrued information there also. I'll let him speak. Let them speak. I have a habit of calling them. It's masculine form, but it's them, it's they, it's we. We co-creating and co-communing with you. It is in this manner that the frequency of your resonance is what slows down and speeds up, you see. Your planet spinning in its revolution and its rotation is a reflection of the consciousness, and the spin is a reflection of the rate or frequency of the consciousness of the global community, you see. It is to accelerate your own consciousness. As your consciousness is accelerated, the spin and the rotation will ultimately accelerate, you see. And it is, in that sense, a reflection, once again, of your own consciousness acceleration. So that which took a linear time of reflecting a projection to be reflected back to you is hastening, is it not? We would suggest that this is because your consciousness is vibrating at a higher accelerated rate. There are still those that are not feeling the effects of the acceleration of the frequency, for they are in a place where time seems to drag. So everyone's perception in that sense can be variable, and in that sense, those that perceive the subtle vibrations or the subtle changes are those which we would suggest are more hypersensitive to those changes. The denser the vibration of the consciousness, they miss the subtleties, you see. Does this answer your question, dear one?
I understand. In regards to the cycles that we are in at the moment and the galactic alignment that we've been told about that will occur in 2012, is there some kind of an event horizon that we are approaching with the closing of this cycle?
Yes, that's explained in one of the chapters in the new book as far as it being the imprint on the causal plane of the old program, because we're all on a cycle of repetitive cycles of that program spinning.
Yes.
Like history repeating itself. And so that at the universal level, the galaxy spinning around and the alignment of the sun with the center, this, I just channeled this for this book, that made clear that because I wasn't really following all the 2012 stuff myself, but heard of it, but I wasn't sure what everybody was saying about it. So, of course, I asked again directly, what does it mean? And basically what Soth says is that the alignment, the core of the galactic system is a black hole, which is the unconscious, and that spins out the program.
Ah, yes.
As the program is spinning out of that black hole into the galactic spiral, and we're part of that program, and we're spinning, and it's all a reflection of the unconscious program at the universal level. It's like every 26,000 years or something, it's entering a new cycle and a new program. Have we done enough work to change the imprint? And in the book he says, yes, there has been changes done. It will spin out a new program, but only in part. Once again,
right.
Some of the old stuff will be repeated in that next 26,000
yes.
cycle. But that still doesn't mean that other things aren't going to take effect after 2012. We're still going to be working. There is a golden age coming, is what Soph says. We have to get to the golden age of humanity before universal ascension.
Well,
he talks about it in the new book about, you know, personal ascension. You can ascend on your own individually at any point.
Yes.
You focus on attaining that, and then globally and universally, that ascension and that alignment will take place far off into humanity's future. And the universal, there's other entities in the universe and other planetary systems.
Mm.
That will all coordinate in its own timing. It has to go at the same time. I mean, you can't just take the whole universe through the black hole, through the portal of light, and ascend without the evolutionary program and, you know, finishing in all its parts.
Yes.
So it's a universal program that is on that cycle. And so, but it doesn't mean that an individual can't go through the portal and light and ascend, or the global's not going to go without, you know, everyone prepared to go. In that sense, everyone's has free will to choose their ascension. And so it's not going to happen of their own, you know, against their will.
Hmm.
So free will is part of it, is what they've been teaching me. Does that answer that question, or do you want to say that?
Yes, no, that definitely does answer the question.
Okay.
And finally, there seems to be a deepening split within humanity itself, a polarization between what we would perceive as the forces of light and the forces of dark. And I wonder sometimes about where this will lead, and whether there might actually be an actual formal split that happens at some point in the future. Do you understand the question?
I do. I do understand the question. Let's see what the answer is. I don't want to speak for my own. I would rather have both answers.
Thank you.
This particular question, because I think it's multidimensionally layered. It's not so linear as the question is.
Yes.
Okay? In that sense, because I think that there's a lot of talk about the masters talk about a new creation of a new light universe, and that's what we're working towards in this alignment. I'm aware of that. As whether, you know, is there going to be a new Earth? You know, a new galaxy, it's all going to be within the direct light. I know that much. It's not, the golden age will occur here, where things will be at peace first and foremost, because you cannot have an ascension without everyone being at peace. Now, as far as the split polarity, Soph is saying right now that's part of the repetition. The end days have always been predicted, and the signs of the times of splitting polarity. Atlantis was one of them that splits, you know, into
mm-hmm.
polarity.
Yep.
And caused a greater timeline rift. And so that's all there in the history repeating itself. It's basically what he's showing me right now. And so that's part of the mythology, that there's a splitting, that there's going to be a separation. So yes, it is a separation, but not in the sense of how people distort it in what I call the religious way.
Right.
You're saved and you're not.
Yes.
Or what I channel Lord Sananda, which is also the Christ consciousness, and I will bring them through at this point to describe better what it means by the separating the chaff from the wheat from the chaff.
Thank you.
And what that saying really means is to separate within your own consciousness. It's separated. Once again, you separate and sort through. You don't want to take the unwanted parts with you, in a sense. You have to separate the dark, shine the light into the dark to transmute it. And so you have to split off and say, that's, you know, wherever there's projection of, you know, they're evil and I'm good, what you see playing out in the world stage
yes.
is, you know, we're the good guys, you're the bad guys. Wherever you see that, do not take sides, but look in your own split of where your own denial of your own dark shadow would be.
Yes.
Of your own projection. Look once again to separate it within yourself of the wheat from the chaff. And do not, you know, give ego fertile ground, is what they're saying right now. Do not let the taking up of sides of good versus bad, evil versus good, whatever, that there's no inherent evil out projected into the world that is not already within the unconscious program of fear that the negative ego then takes and distorts even further, you see. So it's always, once again, to bring it back home to that, where are you denying your own dark shadow and projecting to continue this dual good versus bad, evil versus, you know, good, and you know, bad guys, good guys, and all of that that's playing out on the greater global stage, divisions of countries, and, you know, that there are people within these countries that are beautiful, wonderful people. There are people that are in denial all across the board, and it's to say, we'll wait for those that are in denial to wake up with loving arms at the threshold of their awakening, is what the masters always teach. And so to, you know, harbor any of that in your own unconscious thought. Where are you in denial of that? And of course, you might not be conscious of that if you're unconscious of the program that you're running and projecting. But that can be discerned by looking at your own thoughts and your reactions to the world. What are you taking sides? Are you reacting in fear and things like that? That's what they teach. So as far as creating like a new earth or a new, you know, having an earth for the old people to, you know, the old souls that somebody's judging are not enlightened, and those that, once again, you can see, once again, comes back down to that separation of, you know, some people are going to go over to another planet and learn a lesson. Well, this whole entire universe, according to the masters, is on its evolutionary program, so why would they need another planet?
Yeah.
In this universal system. So it always comes down to the clarity that they bring through and give me, that it's really almost logical, really, when because the brilliance of the genius of the light is, you know, so brilliant that it's, like you said, when you go, oh, and it seems so simple, when you think of it in those terms or approach it in those terms and step into the bigger picture, expand your consciousness into that bigger picture, and can see both sides. That's the six-dimensional awareness level that I can say, okay, I'm not going to side with either or. I am both and. I am both evil and good. Therefore, I can choose joy and love.
Yeah.
And that's the true empowerment of mastery.
Mm. Okay? That's beautifully put. Thank you.
They guided me to say that last part. bring it through beautifully, but I'm trying to translate it also into words that are applicable to people, as the human myself. So, I think that was clear.
That was. Thank you again. Well, that was absolutely wonderful, and I'm certain that the listeners out there got a lot out of our conversation. And
I got a lot out of it too, Liz. Thank you so much. It's always a joy to channel and to bring through and to share. This is what my name means. Thank you for having me.
Well, many blessings to you, Sharon. I wish you all the luck and success in the world for the future and for all of the projects that you will embark on. And keep spreading the amazing energy that you are around the world, and keep teaching the teachers. We need you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a joy, like I said, to fulfill my mission, and it was an honor to have you invite me onto your show. And thank you, and all your endeavors and all the work that you're doing to bring forth all the enlightened awareness and the truth coming through your airways there to the greater globe.
Well, I really hope that we inspired a few others out there to pick up their scepters.
Yes, pick up the scepter of power.
Yes.
Mastery.
Yeah.
Or it's up to us.
That's right.